Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCBQ 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
We've made it back, and joining us now is the one and only Daniel J. Duke, and he's going to be talking about his great-great-grandfather, I believe that's what it was, Jesse James, and his book, Jesse James and the Lost Templar Treasure, Secret Diaries, Coded Maps, and the Knights of the Golden Circle. Thank you for being here, Daniel.
It's my pleasure, and thanks for having me.
This is the first I'm hearing about Jesse James and a relation to the Lost Templar Treasure, so I'm pretty excited.
It's been an exciting journey, just the last 20 years of researching this. I was just as stunned when I stumbled on that as I'm sure most people are.
How did you choose the title of the book? It's awfully long.
Yeah, it is long. I was trying to come up with something short and sweet, you know, like most books. And it just, you know, I had to basically just have a title that described quickly what, you know, what the book was about. And that's the shortest one I could come up with. The publisher, thankfully, I had a good publisher, and they came up with the best possible title. Because some of the ideas I had just didn't sound that great. It sounded a little weird.
I relate to that, I know. So let's first of all connect you, Jesse James. So what's your relation to Jesse?
He was my great-great-grandfather.
Okay, is that through your mother or through your father? How did that work?
Yeah, it was through my mother. My late mother, Betty Dorsett Duke, had written 3 books over the last 25 years dealing with Jesse. And when she passed in 2015, I decided to, you know, I'd helped her research through most of those years. And when I wasn't helping her, I was trying to find any treasures that he may have had. There are a lot of legends that passed down through the family about treasures. So that's how this book came about. Just researching the treasure when I wasn't helping her with the genealogical work and other stuff.
What can you tell us about Jesse James? What do you think that people should know most about him?
Okay. The biggest thing is he didn't die as history stated he did. You know, history claims that he was shot in the back of the head by a fellow gang member, Robert Ford, Robert and Charlie Ford. And he died in St. Joseph, Missouri on April 3rd, 1882. And that's how history states it. And where all the evidence we've dug up over the last couple of decades has shown he faked his death, and he did die. He faked his death, came to Texas, and lived out a peaceful life as a farmer and a Freemason until 1943 at the age of 97. And he took the alias James Lafayette Courtney, which was a cousin's name.
Wow, that's quite the story. So how did he fake his death? In what way? And how did he get away with people believing that he was dead?
Okay, he had moved to Texas and used the alias James Lafayette Courtney in 1871. And a lot of people don't know, he had been trying to find a way out for years. In fact, in 1879, and it's well documented in newspapers from that time, he had, with the help of one of his fellow gang members, George Shepherd, he tried to fake his death in Oklahoma. And George wrote in, you know, they killed a deer or an antelope and left a blood trail leading off into some thick brush. And George rode into town and told, you know, the sheriff that he'd killed Jesse. And they tried to pass it off. The posse went and searched. They never could find a body, so nobody bought the story. And 2 years later, his first cousin, Wood Height, who bore a strong resemblance to Jesse, was shot by Dick Liddell and I believe one of the farmhands. And I got to go on a backstory with that. The Ford brothers, Bob and Charlie Ford, they had a sister named Martha. Well, Martha was a single lady, had some children, and there was a lot of rumors about a love triangle in between her, Wood Height, and her farmhand, and possibly some other men. But there was an argument, jealousy. Wood Height got shot and killed. Dick Liddell got wounded, and Wood Height, you know, being Jesse's first cousin, and it resembled him strongly, they passed the body off as Jesse James. He wasn't in the same city, but it was during the winter. The ground was too frozen to bury anybody, and they covered him up, and I think they used that as the perfect opportunity to pass his body off as Jesse. None of the law enforcement, the Pinkerton detectives, or anybody else could identify Jesse. That's why he got by with one of the reasons he had such a long outlaw career. Nobody knew what he looked like, and it's kind of hard to catch somebody when you don't even have a good description of him. So the only people who really knew what he looked like were his immediate family and gang members, and they helped, you know, they went along with it and said, yeah, that's Jesse.
So what do you think that with all the movies and the shows and things about Jesse James, what do you think is right? Like, what do people know that's correct about him? That's what I'm trying
to say. There's a lot that's been, you know, with movies. Some people get mad at Hollywood for making playing with history and not giving the getting down to all the facts. But to me, you know, movies are entertaining, and I always enjoyed all of them. I didn't like the way it ended, but that's just how, you know, yeah. It was entertaining, and it made a great story. But at the same time, there's a lot that some other books, you know, I think, of course, the death, the way they report his death is completely wrong. But it's not their fault that Jesse needed that lie to live. You know, it was either that or eventually get caught and probably killed or spend the rest of his life in a prison. So he needed that lie, and that lie passed down as authentic history. A lot of people looked at him, you know, half the country viewed him as America's Robin Hood. And the other half, you know, the other half of the country, if it was even as many as half of the country, viewed him as just a really bad man who needed to be brought in. He was real popular. And that came also with the help of a newspaper man named John Newman Edwards, who had helped him out a lot. He added to the Robin Hood status of the James gang. But, you know, most of the stories get the basics right. It's just the death that was wrong about it.
So now, how did he get involved in Freemasons and all of this Knights Templar? How does this story connect with him?
Some people have asked me if he was in the Freemasons before he changed his name. I have no proof of that. I've never been able to find any proof, but I do have proof that after he changed his name and was here in Texas, he joined the Freemasons. And I, you know, with all old outlaws, there's always some kind of treasure legend associated with them. Most of the time, it turns out to be just nothing more than a good campfire tale. But I thought, you know, a map had passed down through the family, a couple of his treasures, but I could never find where, you know, I couldn't find a geographic location that those maps applied to. And I went from there to searching. I thought maybe at most I may find a jar of coins or an old saddlebag with a couple of coins. I would have been happy. And that's when I stumbled on to all the other treasures.
So maybe start this with how you and what evidence you found to connect him to lost treasures and coded maps and stuff.
Okay. Well, he had several treasure maps. Those passed down through the family. I had tried to locate those and I wasn't able to. There was also rumors that he was a member of a secretive Southern society that formed during the Civil War. There were a Confederate secret society called the Knights of the Golden Circle. A lot of people refer to them as the KGC, just their acronym. But they, during the war, their job was to slow Union movements and cause as much trouble for the North as they could. After the Civil War, their stated alleged goals were to find enough wealth in any way they could to fund a second Civil War. And I thought, well, I know he rode with a Southern Confederate guerrilla group, so it wouldn't shock me if he wasn't a member of the Knights of the Golden Circle. But I never could find any proof of that. In treasure hunting circles and other books, there was mention of a treasure template. And I thought, well, maybe this could be of use for locating his treasure. And I went along, you know, it took years doing this. I couldn't find anything at first. And a former Texas Attorney General Wagner Carr had been talking to my mother a lot over the years about Jesse. He was very interested in Jesse James. He originally believed another person was Jesse until he saw my mother's evidence. And then he believed our story. He had his driver show my mother and I where three treasures were that were large treasures and where they were recovered. They'd already been taken and recovered, but it was nice knowing where they were. Finding those locations or being shown those locations helped me figure out the dimensions of the template. So I knew where all these treasures were. In addition to another, there was a man named George Roaming. When he was 10 years old, Jesse was an old man. George was hired by Jesse to move and bury 680 bars of gold, each weighing about 15 pounds each. When he was in El Paso, I went out to meet him with my mother. He drew us a map to where it was located. We found, and he told us to go find it. So we went, obviously we went looking, and it's on Fort Hood Military Reservation. So there's no way we're going to even touch that. If it's even still there, it may have been moved or recovered since then. But that helped line up everything with the template. I started branching out. And I noticed that when I branched out and covered the whole state of Texas with this template in the form of a grid pattern, it lined up with other known treasure locations, rumored treasure locations, and sites of historic importance. And I went further on Google Earth, drawing this grid pattern. It lines up with places like the Newport Tower in Rhode Island, the Los Lunas Decalogue Stone in New Mexico. Scott Wolter of America Unearthed, it lines up with the hooked X symbol on the Kensington runestone that he had discovered. That just started amazing me. I thought a lot of these sites are much older than the Knights of the Golden Circle. So that rules that out. Who could it have been? And that's how, to make a long story short, it led straight to the Freemasons.
Wow. What kind of a life did he live after his fake death? Was it just all based on this sort of search?
I believe so. His life after that, he was very secretive, even with most of his children. They said, they never knew where he was going. He would ride in the morning. He would saddle up his horse and ride off in one direction. And then he'd return in the evening coming from the opposite direction. And nobody ever knew where he was going or what he was doing. He played passed himself off as a farmer, but he never really worked that hard, judging from his diary that he left behind. He didn't do that much work. He'd usually hire other people to do work for him. And most farmers back in those days, it was hard just to keep food on your table, let alone having enough goods to sell to the store or the market. So, you know, he was living very well, but nobody knew how or why.
Where do you think he got the money?
Robberies, and there's probably a lot of robberies they did that aren't documented, but he had a lot more gold than he should have had, even if after running a long career as an outlaw, he had robbed a lot of banks and trains and stages, but he'd never taken as much gold as has been found and recovered in the area around where he lived. So I don't know where he got it all. I think part of it may have been, I think later on, part of the, when he joined the Freemasons, I do think some of the gold, that gold ties back into the founding of America. Rosicrucians, Freemasons, men like Francis Bacon, John Dee, who was his mentor, all the way back to the Knights Templar. And I think that may be where a lot of the gold came from the Templar, and through the centuries, they just slowly added to the caches around the country.
So did he pass on any of this information to any of his kids so that they could carry it on? Or
He passed on a lot of clues. He did pass on some information to some of his children, but it was, he didn't just come out and say it. It was like he would leave clues and they had to figure it out. In his diary, he left a lot of strong clues. His name was, you know, he lived under the name James Lafayette Courtney. On one of the pages of his diary, he wrote, "When Stillman triced, J.L. Courtney is my heist." And I thought, well, that pretty much says he stole his name. That's, that J.L. Courtney is my heist. And then on another page, he signed his name J. James. And then yet another page has the initials J.W.J. So, and there's a lot of known James gang members listed in his diary as well.
So now, have you been able to follow up any of this stuff with, the Ford family or any of the other people that were involved in the faking of his death?
One of the descendants of the Ford, Charlie Ford, had contacted my mother, and their story fell right in line with our story. And theirs was mostly family lore. And they had a couple of photographs, and the photograph they had of Bob and Charlie after the alleged death, they were on horseback, and my great-great-grandfather was right between them. So, you know, there's a photo of them together after the alleged assassination.
So what's it going to take to prove that he actually lived and didn't die to the hands of Ford? Like, what would it take?
All right. Well, in my opinion, we've already proven it. My mother proved it with all the forensic data, a forensic analysis of all the photographs. They matched our family photographs to known historically accepted photographs of Jesse and his family and all the other records. But to really seal the deal, it's going to take DNA. And that's where, you know, they supposedly did the they exhumed the grave, the alleged grave of Jesse, in 1995 in Kearney, Missouri, and they claimed that they proved with DNA that they, you know, that he did die as history stated. Well, after looking into all the facts surrounding that, they didn't prove anything. The county commissioner at the time, Stephen Caruso, who's an attorney in Kansas City now, he was the county commissioner, and he's been on record as stating the hair he said it was a tawdry sideshow, and he couldn't. The way they did it was just a circus. He told my mother and I in person that the hair they submitted, that they tested, and the tooth that they tested weren't from Jesse. The hair that they claimed was from Jesse, Stephen Caruso had pulled that hair out of his friend's head, who was at the time the Clay County Parks Director. He put it in an envelope, and that's what they tested as Jesse's hair. He said he kept the hair from the museum because the way they were going about it, it was real shady, and nobody was even qualified to do that testing, or the people in charge of it. The tooth that they tested was dug up by amateurs in 1978 in the yard of the James Farman Museum, along with a hog's tooth and a dog's tooth, and kept in a Tupperware jar and passed around for people to touch and handle and all that kind of stuff. So there's no chain of custody on anything they tested. And the grave that they did exhume, they found two bodies in, including a female body, and they got no DNA out of that grave. They claimed that they, you know, when asked, why didn't you exhume Jesse's mother and just compare the DNA? They said that went against Missouri law, which was completely wrong. There was no such Missouri law stating that, that they couldn't exhume her. So everything they claimed has been, excuse the pun, but shot full of holes.
Oh, boy.
So can you tell me, like, why do you think he would fake his death? Like, was it to change his lifestyle? Like, what was the deal with that?
He wanted out. He tried to surrender at the end of the Civil War. That the war, when he was a guerrilla, that war had started 10 years before the official beginning of the Civil War. It was between Kansas and Missouri. Red Legs from Kansas were raiding into Missouri. He was 14 years old. He was plowing his field on his family farm. Red Legs from Kansas rode in, strapped him to the plow, brutally beat him, went on to the house, hung his stepfather almost to the point of death, and gave him permanent brain damage. They pushed his pregnant mother around, strapped her to a tree, and whipped her. So, you know, he wanted revenge. That was his whole reason for going and joining Quantrell's guerrillas. Then after the war was over, he tried to surrender, and he got shot through the chest. Most normal Confederate soldiers were granted amnesty at the end of the war, except for the Confederate guerrillas. And he was a guerrilla, so he wasn't granted amnesty. When they dealt with them, they would hunt them down and kill them on sight, or try them, put them in prison, and then execute them. So he didn't really have much of a choice. It was either leave the country or choose the outlaw life, and he chose to be an outlaw.
Now, so what happened to all the money, do you think, after he died?
I think a lot of people claim, and historians claim, that they would rob a bank or a train and they'd burn through the money real quick. And I don't think that was the case at all. I think they kept enough to live on, and the rest of it was added to different caches in different locations.
So now, what's the tie to Oak Island and that?
Okay. Tracing this back from Jesse, I wanted to know, okay, I'd already discounted the Knights of the Golden Circle, because a lot of these and the historical sites that line up with this template predate the KGC.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
See, so it was kind of like doing a family tree only for an organization. I wanted to know everybody involved and find the beginning. So I went from, you know, Jesse through Freemasons, Albert Pike, who was a famous Freemason, and that traced back through Freemasonry to a lot of the founding fathers of the U.S. who were Freemasons. And from them, it tied in with Francis Bacon in England. And I thought, okay, this is the guy who did it. He's the father of modern day Freemasonry. He's he was a genius. There's so many works attributed to him. He had to have been the guy. And then I got to looking around him, and it went further back through John Dee, who was his mentor. John Dee was known as the original 007, a famous alchemist, advisor to Queen Elizabeth. It went from him on through different alchemists and Jewish rabbis. And I traced the Jewish rabbis back to a famous rabbi named, he went by the name of Rashi, or he's often called Rashi. He was the favored court guest of Hugh, the Count of Champagne, who was one of the founders of the Knights Templar. And there's a lot in between that. But he, like one map, I found a hidden map with one of the, you know, tracing the Jewish rabbis back. There was a book written in 1516 called Porte Lucis, and it has a hidden map. It's also got the Tree of Life on the cover, you know, an illustration, with a rabbi sitting on a chair that's in the shape of the hooked X, which has been made famous by Scott Wolter. And he ties that in with the Knights Templar as well. So there's a lot of cross, our research has crossed in a lot of areas and point to the same direction. It's been amazing. And if you'd like, I could go into more detail about any of this. I don't know if we have time or not.
Yeah, we have a little bit of time. Maybe get into a little bit more detail on the, because Oak Island's so popular and the treasure.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, so, and I apologize for forgetting about Oak Island on that. I believe when the Templar in 1307, when they were raided, a lot of them, it's said and believed by a lot of historians that they escaped. They went to Scotland, and from there, with also people they knew in Scotland, like the St. Clair family, it's said that they brought the treasures to the New World. And most of them, I believe, stopped at Oak Island and buried something. I don't know what they buried there, but I think that I personally believe they used Oak Island as a staging area and over the years branched out across the Americas. I don't know if anything's still there at Oak Island or if it's all gone or been recovered and moved. I also think, go ahead.
The Lagina brothers are still digging there. I mean, we see the show on the History Network.
Yeah.
I've personally been on the island a few times myself because I grew up near there. It's pretty fascinating. I was brought up to believe that there is something there. Just the whole idea that every 10 feet they were finding oak logs down into, you know, over 100 feet. And then found this stone that they later decrypted that evening to say, you know, so far below a million pounds are buried. Mm-hmm. And then when they come back the next day, the thing is full of water.
Yeah. They did And I've heard that. I've read that and heard that. President Roosevelt had looked for the treasure there. Also, John Wayne, the famous actor John Wayne had also searched for the treasure there, and other people. I agree with you on that. There's too much evidence showing, at the very least, that something was there. And if they're recovering, you know, as they're going down into that through the pit, you know, like you mentioned, every 10 feet there were logs and I think it was coconut fibers.
That's right. Yeah,
it shows to me that says something's still down there. Because they're, if the coconut fibers were laid out and the logs were laid out as they were, that just indicates that something's still down there. If that had already been recovered from the spot, it would have been all jumbled up and, you know, a mess.
Well, some people believe that as well as Templar treasure, there are also papers down there that prove that Francis Bacon was the actual writer of Shakespeare's works.
I've heard the same thing. And, you know, that story also applies to the Brewton Parish Vault in Williamsburg, Virginia, which is part of there's two templates I discovered when I was researching this. One I call the Veil Template. It looks like a grid system covering Mexico, the United States, and Canada. And the other template, which plays along with the Veil Template, is in the shape of the Kabbalistic Tree of Life. And the head of it is at the Brewton Parish Church. And it's all the numbers and the gematria tie in with different meanings and distances. It all ties in together. But Marie Bauer Hall, who was the wife of Manly Palmer Hall, who was a famous 33rd degree Mason, author, and lecturer, she had found, decrypted a lot of anagrams on tombstones in the church at Williamsburg and located the original foundations of the church. Nobody believed her until she proved them and excavated the original foundations. And in addition to that, she said there was a vault, I believe it was 22 feet below the cemetery, which is supposed to contain documents just like what you had stated that prove, you know, documents of historical and spiritual significance that also prove that Francis Bacon was the author of the Shakespeare works, in addition to other information.
It's interesting how that keeps cropping up.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I mean, Mark Twain, he had mentioned or stated his belief very strongly that anybody, you know, basically that Francis Bacon was the author of the Shakespeare works.
Interesting. I've been fascinated with masonry and that kind of thing for quite some time. How deeply have you looked into it? Are you a Mason yourself? I don't know if you're allowed to talk about that. I don't know the rules.
Yeah. He'd tell you, but he'd have to kill you.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not a Freemason. I do plan on joining if they'll have me. After all the research I've done over the years, and you know, I read Morals and Dogma and a lot of other the works of Manly Palmer Hall, and even the current day, the Knight Templar Grand Master Timothy Hogan. I've read his books, all of which, you know, I was searching for clues. And whilst doing that, I have come to the belief, a firm belief, that the whole reason the United States was formed was for the, you know, all these different groups throughout history, from the Templar, the Jewish rabbis, Rosicrucians, alchemists, all these different groups were persecuted horribly by the church, you know, in the Middle Ages and throughout the years. And they had one common goal, or a strong common goal, was to have a place where they could all coexist and speak their minds or practice their beliefs without worrying about being burned at the stake or beheaded. So I think that's the whole reason behind all of this. The gold that the Templar were said to have discovered, along with historic documents from not only the Jewish faith, but Druze and Sufi mystic documents and other articles and beliefs that they had brought over and hidden. I think a lot of it is maybe too sensational for society to handle at times. But I think it's meant to come out slowly. I think they slowly feed things out when they think the time is right. And I think that's a big part of this whole story.
So for someone that doesn't know what Freemasons are or what they do, can you give kind of a rundown of that?
Well, I'm not one, so yeah. I can't, you know, I'm not an expert on that. But at the same time, I think they've got a saying that I always liked, and every Freemason that I've known was very nice. I haven't met a horrible one or a bad guy that was a Freemason. They've got the slogan, they take a good man and make him better. I don't believe they're a religion. They don't practice, you know, one certain belief and you have to follow that. It's just a group. Basically, what their idea was for America or for the Americas was a land of freedom and liberty. They they can come together, people from different backgrounds, races, and faiths, and just coexist and share their ideas and expand on each other's knowledge. And I think that's the basics of Freemasonry.
Well, interesting. They do require that you believe in a higher power of some sort, and I'm curious to find out more. Maybe I'll have to talk to a Mason about it.
That's a good idea. I have read that as well. You have to believe in a supreme being or deity, and yeah. That's I think that's basically one of the. There's a few things you gotta check off the list. If you believe this or that, then you're fine.
What do you hope people get when they read your book?
I think there's several things. First, Jesse James, just that alone, that changes, history here in the United States and the Old West. But beyond Jesse, he was an important part in his time, but he was just one small part of a giant picture that goes back to the Templars and even beyond that. A lot of the Freemasons, like I had mentioned, they wanted all these different groups, Jews, Muslims, Freemasonry, all these different beliefs, races, and backgrounds can that's a good question. I'm starting to get tongue-tied. But basically, everybody can coexist and get along together and still enjoy freedoms and liberties. The Freemasons aren't a bad group just because they have some secrets. They're protectors of a lot of different faiths, liberty, and freedom. And that's how I view the whole point of this was, I started looking for treasure. It was kind of my own. I wanted to have something from my grandfather, but I also wanted gold. Who wouldn't want gold? But right. Then as I got deeper into it, I realized the gold's not for me. It's for a much greater purpose. And it was while researching, it's almost like I had an awakening of some sort. And it changed me as a person. And I think this, the treasures, the Freemasons, I view them as heroes, and I think that's why we have a free country with liberty and, freedom. So I think that's basically the point of it. And we can't all coexist, so. We can. It's hard. You can't.
Well, yeah. Turns pretty bumpy when you can't, I tell you.
Yeah. Yeah,
you mentioned geometry, I can't even pronounce that, and esoteric symbols. How deeply did you dive into this stuff? And if it's math, I'm probably going to fail.
It's a lot of math in it, gematria, but it's and I was the same way. I thought, oh, my God, what is this stuff? It was a lot of headaches and a lot of coffee. But over time, as simply as I can say it, the Hebrew alphabet is 22 letters, and they assigned a number to each letter. Then when you make different combinations of letters that spells out different combinations of letters amount or add up to certain numbers, and the words that they make or phrases have a strong correlation to other words and phrases that mean similar or that have a similar definition, and I'm probably mangling this. But
so the number of the beast and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, that kind of thing. But the number of the beast I never came across on that, but that's another thing. There's a lot of different meanings for, like 666, for example. That's also a solar number that represents the sun. It's also, I had one lady tell me, you shouldn't be looking into that stuff. She was a very religious lady. And I asked her why, and we got to talking. I pointed out to her, King Solomon, it's mentioned in the Old Testament, that the gold he received every year as tributes from other people around him always amounted to 666 talents of gold. Mm-hmm. And so it's not always a bad number. People see that number, and a lot of them shy away from it real quick, but it could mean a lot of other things. Or you could add it up, 6 plus 6 plus 6 is, 6 times 3 is 18, 1 plus 8 is 9, and 9 can be viewed as the number of truth. So it just depends on how you look at it.
Wow. So what are you hoping, like when you've done this book and you're kind of promoting it and stuff, are you hoping that this brings you closer to the family, the James family, and fills in some of your history? Is that part of this?
That's a big part of it. When my mother first came out with this, she thought, and we all thought, the world would be happy to know that he wasn't assassinated and shot by the dirty coward Robert Ford, and that Robert Ford wasn't actually a dirty coward. He was helping him out. My mother took that and presented it to the James Farman Museum in Missouri, they weren't happy at all. They didn't like hearing it. And it just got worse from there over the years. She would write a book and they would mock her and harass her online. The second book, after she wrote her second book, people connected with the James Farman Museum had sent death threats to her. The FBI got involved and put a stop to that, thankfully. And it was real hard dealing with them, but it wasn't all of them. It was just a small vocal group that were tied in with the Farman Museum in Missouri. But I would like to somehow eventually restore relationships or some kind of working relationship where people could just share their evidence. And it would be great.
So now your mother's passed. Have you got any other family left that's part of this?
Yeah, my sister, Teresa, she and I wrote a book together that's just strictly about Jesse and goes into more detail about this. It's slated to come out next summer. And then, we've got other relatives and a lot of cousins and relatives who have heard the same stories.
Now, do you have a website that people can go to if they want to find out more information or contact you?
Yeah, my website is authordanduke.com, and you can type in my name, Daniel J. Duke, or in Google or Yahoo or any other search engine and find a lot of, my Facebook, my Twitter. I'm on Facebook and Twitter. For some reason, I can't remember those addresses by heart. But you can search for my name. I've got a page, Facebook and Twitter, and my website.
What's the response on the book in general right now? What kind of feedback are you getting?
It's been real good. I've had one negative review from some guy, and the rest of the reviews have been great. My favorite one is from the current Knight Templar Grand Master, who wrote a glowing endorsement of my book, and it's actually printed on the back of my book. Timothy W. Hogan is his name, and he's also an author and lecturer.
So he actually has accepted this as well, from Freemason?
Oh, yeah. If you'd like, I can read a quick paragraph that he from a couple of the paragraphs. But, yeah, he wrote, "There have always been those who have sought to shape history to ensure that freedoms and artifacts could be preserved in the Americas. Daniel J. Duke's book is on the cutting edge of revealing some of what lies remained or some of what has remained hidden. Anybody who is interested in the Templar legacy and their connections with the Americas will find true gems in this book." And part of the rest of it, he had also mentioned that I had cracked part of the code tying back to the Templar and the treasures from Jerusalem.
Wow.
So, I saw that, and it was, I couldn't have dreamed of a better endorsement than that.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, this book is available everywhere, and, of course, it's on Amazon, and we will put it on our website so people can just go one click while they're listening.
Well, thank you.
Well, of course. And so our guest has been the author of The Lost Templar Treasure, and the story is about Jesse James, and we've had his great-great-grandson, Daniel J. Duke. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Thanks, Daniel. Awesome stuff.
Thanks a lot.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
The mission has been completed.
The end! By George, he's got it! It is the end!
I'll see you.
If you're lying to me, I'll be back.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.